T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
Welcome back.
Ian Happ.
Happ drives one in the air. Left center field. It's got a chance. Grand slam. Grand slam, Ian Happ.
Welcome back. Outfielder for your Chicago Cubs.
This is trouble back toward the wall as Happ on the track makes the catch. Very good play by Ian Happ. That was not a routine play.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
We have Jeremy Piven joining the podcast today.
I remember when you guys won the World Series, you know, after 108 years, I was doing a night shoot with Jamie Foxx, and the game started, and it was like torture, because, you know, here I am, a lifelong Cubs fan, and it finally happens, and I'm on the set, and my first priority has to be totally present in that shoot. So I would have, like, crew members coming up and whispering in my ear, you're down 2 runs. And I'd be in the middle of the scene, you know, just like, shut up! I literally rapped, and I ran down the street and was standing right outside the pub and got to watch that final play. And so I got to see it happen in real time by just one play. So I felt very fortunate. It was an incredible feeling.
Ian Happ, every Thursday on the Dan Bernstein Show on 670 The Score.
Welcome back.
Breaking form a bit today to do this right out of the gate with Ian Happ, who is on Twitter at @IHapp_1 and joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. So you're back to work, Ian. How's the new routine?
I am back to work. I'm very excited about it. It's a little different. We're kind of still trying to figure things out. I don't think not everybody's gotten tested yet. Everybody's getting into town. We're not officially started yet, I guess, with team practice. So we'll get in a little bit better routine at the end of the week.
Have you been tested yet?
I have. Yep. I've been tested, cleared, actually at Wrigley now. So being able to get my work in here has been great. First day was yesterday. Hit on the field with Anthony, and it was just the field's perfect right now. It's beautiful. I wish people could see it, because it was just a special moment to be outside hitting baseballs again at Wrigley Field.
I know it's got to be weird in the locker room, or what's functioning as locker rooms right now, because after all that time and all that effort to give you guys that special place to be, and now you can't sort of have it. The connections with teammates are going to be different right now. Your interactions are going to be different. How are you sort of maintaining distance while also being together in a way that baseball teams have to be together?
Yeah, it's very strange. You know, everybody's wearing masks to the clubhouse. The group is spread out. You have lockers all over the place, and you know, using the visiting locker room, and just all kinds of stuff that you would never think of having to do at Wrigley Field. So it's definitely strange, but the precautions are necessary. Our entire staff is doing a great job with staying on top of it, making sure that all the protocols are followed, and really just making sure that guys are as safe as they can possibly be.
I know you guys have talked about it on the compound, and Dakota Meckes, I was saying, like, how do you not spit? How does a pitcher not spit? I mean, are the spit police walking around? Are there signs? Are there reminders of trying to create new and healthier habits?
No police out yet, just because I think not everybody's here yet. I think there will be some people watching and making sure that the rules are being followed. But for right now, it's on the players. It's on us. You know, we understand the protocols. We've seen them. I was outside yesterday taking BP, and M was definitely conscious of that, conscious of just everything that we're talking about doing to make sure that we're in as safe a place as possible, because it will be a competitive advantage to keep guys on the field, to keep guys healthy, as well as the right thing to do.
Tommy Hotovy came on The Score yesterday at 8 o'clock and told his personal and harrowing story about his ordeal with COVID-19. He said that he had been sharing his journey, as he called it, with the pitchers. How aware were others of what he was going through, and how sobering is it to have it hit home like that?
Yeah, I think I was more aware than most of our position players, just because I was living in the house with Dakota as he was going through it. And so Dakota would be on the pitcher's calls, and we would get weekly updates on how he was doing. And I think the most amazing part of that is both his family situation, having to be very, very isolated, and also the fact that he wasn't testing negative for a month, I guess. So I can't imagine. I think that we're all happy that he's back to being healthy, that he's putting some weight back on. But yeah, just, it was the whole Cubs family was definitely with him through that time.
I want to get to the news of the day, or certainly of yesterday, when MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred was on the Dan Patrick Show and didn't just say the quiet part out loud. He went further than that in saying that no matter what would happen in negotiation, essentially they were never going to play more than 60 games, and just admitting openly that much of some supposed negotiation was really not that. He said the reality is we weren't going to play more than 60 games no matter how the negotiations with the players went. And I'm thinking, dude, for a Harvard law trained negotiating professional to not understand the sword of Damocles that is that grievance that's still hanging over his head, that you guys did not waive your right to grieve. Did your jaw drop when you saw this?
I've seen the quote. I haven't seen the full interview, so I hope I guess I don't hope, but I don't know if it's out of context or not. But yeah, just a crazy, crazy thing for him to say. And the other part of that is, I think we knew pretty early on that was their number, or somewhere around there was their number, because of the proposals that they were sending over, because of the percentage of the salaries that they were willing to pay. But it's not good for the game. It's not good for the way that the fans look at the game, and if Major League Baseball is looking fans in the eye and telling them that they're only going to play a certain percentage of the season, I just don't think that's where we want to head as a group.
And I think very simply that those words, best efforts, that's National Labor Relations Board can look at this and say that at the very least that falls far short of the legal standard of best efforts when you say we weren't going to play more than 60 games no matter how the negotiations went. That is very clearly, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an arbitrator, but that doesn't look like best efforts to me.
Nope, it definitely doesn't, and it definitely didn't feel like best efforts at the time, until right at the end there when they were in their window of exactly what they probably internally had agreed to. So it is unfortunate that that's how the negotiation went overall.
Ian, I know you only have a couple of minutes for us. I appreciate you carving out some time, as always. We'll get into a little bit more of a regular routine, looking probably 9:30 or so most Thursdays when we can let it breathe a little bit more. But I just wanted to ask about something that I heard in your conversation that you had with Jeremy Piven. When you're talking about why it's nice to play for the Cubs and why it's nice to play in Chicago, and there's something that I wanted to make sure that I heard right, where you said that the media was generally, I don't know if the word you used was nicer or or favorable, or maybe compared to other markets. And I'm wondering, how do you judge that? What's the context? Is that a shared sentiment around MLB that it's a nicer place to play with your interactions with the media?
Yeah, Chicago is a pretty favorable place with the media because for the most part, the group isn't out to get you. They're not out to make a storyline of a misquote or only print part of the story. They do a great job of giving us a chance to really express ourselves and hear our voice. And it's treated more as a season. They're a little bit more understanding. I know we were very fortunate with Joe to take a lot of pressure off us and do a lot of the media responsibilities. But just looking at some of the other major markets that I know we've heard guys that have played for some of the markets, and they talk about 162 single game seasons, where you know at the end of every day, it's you know if you lost that day, it's the end of the world. So our media, our market does a great job of kind of seeing the whole picture about not getting too high or too low, and I think we really appreciate that as a group. We appreciate the fact that we can feel comfortable talking to our media and not feel like we always have to be 100% on guard.
Well, it's going to be put to the test now, because now we do have 60 individual seasons essentially right now.
Exactly right. Yeah, we hope. I hope that those comments will carry on. I hope everybody that's listening stay nice with us. We're doing our best here.
Ian, thanks as always. We'll let you get back to work and look forward to talking next week.
Thanks so much.
That is Ian Happ, who joins us every Thursday here on Sports Radio 670. We're going to take a brief time out, and then we're going to come back. We're going to start the show in earnest, and I want to get into that stuff that Rob Manfred said, because I can't believe it. I can't believe he said the things he said, that the commissioner of baseball just walked right into an NLRB grievance trap. A guy as smart and as educated as he is said what he said is just astonishing to me. So I want to go through some of those comments. We'll get to it and get the show open and flying next. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And we are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. So here's how the rest of the show is going to lay out. We're going to listen to some of this stunning Rob Manfred interview in just a bit. And then at 10 o'clock, Keith Smith, a Yahoo Sports NBA writer, also with Real GM. He is the one who is, as a former Disney employee, really plugged in with what's going on with the plans for the NBA bubble and how that's all going to happen. He's going to join us at 10. We're then going to hear from NBA Commissioner Adam Silver shortly after that, because he did a wide-ranging interview with a Time Magazine podcast that gave us his really unvarnished and very honest thoughts about the trepidation that they still may have going into what they're doing. Midday Midway at 10:40, and then to take us into our weekend, and for those of us who are getting tomorrow as a corporate holiday, this is our Friday. This is the start of our weekend, and we know the people will be grilling once again. So as popular as it has been, our own Shane Reardon, our expert with proteins and heat and all those things, is going to be with us for another open phone line edition of Shane's Meat Live. And we look forward to doing that. 312-644-6767 is the phone number at WSCR The Score. You can email us at Bernstein at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. We're streaming at 670thescore.com. Text the text zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you text 312-644-6767, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein670. You can follow my personal account also. That is at Dan_Bernstein. Do download the radio.com app to stream the score on your mobile devices. You can interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. And remember, on that app, you get the rewind function to allow you to go back and listen to interviews. You want to go back and listen to the Ian Happ interview, it's right there for you. Anything that you want is right there, and you are in control of your score consumption experience via the radio.com app. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer, and the Mexicutioner got moved into the Kevin Zipak spot today. So with us on the board doing what Ray Diaz usually does is Jordan Malley. So I mentioned the comment, and I quoted Rob Manfred when we were just talking to Ian Happ. But you got to hear him. You got to hear this. I mean, with everything that we know about how this all went down and the weeks that we spent trying to figure out why baseball simply couldn't understand what they agreed to in March. And apparently what sounds like they pretended to not understand what they had agreed to in March. Rob Manfred, commissioner of baseball, was on the Dan Patrick Show. And it started with a question to him about if he could go back to March and do something differently in negotiations, what might it be?
I think that agreement that we reached in March with the players would have looked very different. I think one of the difficulties that we encountered is, you know, we try to be proactive, try to get an agreement that addressed the situation. And frankly, the situation evolved differently than we expected and made the subsequent negotiation difficult for us, I think.
Give me a specific of what you would have put in or taken out.
Well, I just think that we would have been more explicit about the need for subsequent negotiation. I mean, I think the agreement was clear that it contemplated playing in stadiums with fans. We took we had no obligation to play unless we could play with fans, and the players understood that. We thought it made clear that there would have to be a discussion of playing empty. I think I just would have written the words, you know, if we're going to play empty, there needs to be another negotiation. I think that negotiation probably would have gone a little differently had we done that. But, you know, hindsight's perfect, you know.
How would you rate the job that you did? Like where we are right now, that we're starting spring training again and we got 60 games.
Look, I think the most important thing to our fans is that we're going to make every attempt to get the game back on the field. You know, I know some people have talked about longer seasons, 60 too short. The reality is, we weren't going to play more than 60 games, no matter how the negotiation with the players went or any other factor. 60 games is the outside of the envelope, given the realities of the virus. And, you know, I think this is the one thing that we come back to every single day. We're trying to manage something that has proven to be unpredictable and unmanageable. I know it hasn't looked particularly pretty in spots, but having said that, if we can pull off this 60-game season, I think it was the best we were going to do for our fans, given the course of the virus.
But even if the players accepted everything you offered, there was no way that you would have gone to 80 games. It was still going to be 60.
It's the calendar, Dan. I mean, yeah. We're playing 60 games in 63 days right now. I don't see, given how the reality of the health situation over the past few weeks, how we were going to get going any faster than the calendar we're on right now, no matter what the state of those negotiations were. And yet, you know, look, we did get a suboptimal result from the negotiation in some ways. You know, the fans aren't going to get an expanded postseason, which I think would have been good with the shortened season. And, you know, look, the players left real money on the table. They left $25 million worth of playoff pools, $33 million worth of salary advances. But that's what happens when you have a negotiation that instead of being collaborative gets, you know, into sort of a conflict situation.
I think I better understand his position now. I heard it in his answer. There's a problem with it, though, because it sounds to me like if he's going to argue, counter-argue a grievance or defend baseball from a player's grievance, it sounds to me like when he said the March agreement was clear that any of their best efforts were tied to fans in stands, and then as soon as they realized that they had gone through this negotiation, they had agreed to prorated full pay, and when they realized they were not going to be able to have the revenue of fans in the stands, that changed their responsibilities under best efforts. That sounds like what he thinks he's doing and why perhaps he thought he could say what he said with impunity. The problem is the letter that was sent by the lawyers that we have discussed at length, that was sent in May, that Eugene Friedman had talked about on these airwaves. Baseball admitted that it wasn't the case. So it sounds like he's going back, like he's going to disingenuously try to argue, once there is a grievance in front of an arbitrator, that whatever was at the time considered best efforts to play was changed when they got the news that there would be, that there was an assumption. And then he admitted it. He said, well, I would wish I would have put it in writing. You didn't. You didn't put it in writing. And your own lawyers, MLB lawyers, admitted it. And eventually said, okay, well, I guess we'll have to pay a pro rata. And that's why they dragged their feet, and that's why they shortened the season, and that's why it's a smoking gun for him to say we were never going to play more than 60 games, because they didn't want to have to pay the players more than they absolutely had to pay the players. And it's sitting right in front of us. Rob Manfred continued, because he was asked about how many owners were in conflict here, how many owners just didn't want a season.
I think if you gave everybody truth serum, there were one or two that were opposed to the idea of playing for health reasons. The vast, vast majority of our owners wanted to play. And I think from the perspective of the owners, they're making an investment, you know, in terms of additional losses in order to get the game back on the field, because we feel it's important to have the game back on the field. We owe it to our fans.
I'm glad you mentioned the 60 games, because a source told me, and I told this audience, I don't know how many days ago, it was last week or maybe 10 days ago, that it was going to be 60 games. That was what was agreed to. No matter what the negotiations were going on, the 60 games, that was etched in stone. But, you know, you had to have a hard out of when you were going to be playing the World Series, the playoff games. Is that fair?
I think that everybody has certain things that you accept as really good advice. One of the pieces of advice we received early on from the medical experts, the pandemic experts that we've been working with, is that by the end of September, the risk of another spike and a shutdown was going up dramatically. Given that, one of our guiding principles, we were going to finish no later than September 27th, which was the scheduled date, and we were going to play the postseason on its normal calendar. Given that hard end date, what I said about the calendar before in the 60 games, if you look around the country, okay, there was no place or no possibility of us resuming operations either in home markets or in the spring training facilities at a materially earlier time than July 1. It just was not consistent with the public health situation.
Which is a questionable assumption as well, because so much of their future bookend of we have to be done at this point because of the inevitable second wave or inevitable second spike, whatever you want to say, that's not 100% certain. Most epidemiologists that we've heard from say it could happen. If you look at what happened in 1918 with the Spanish flu, it happened there. It has happened with influenzas before, and they're following it. But there's no guarantee. They took it as a guarantee. They went doctor shopping long enough to say that this is the absolute judgment of science and medicine to say we have to be done at this point, as yet another way of limiting the number of games they would have to pay players the agreed upon pro rata number. So that's another one where you can't let that slide, because it is far from 100% certain. Anthony Fauci has said it, and everybody else, and Dr. Birx has said it too, that there isn't a guarantee of a second wave, even though as now we're deciding that we want to extend the first wave as long as possible. For baseball to say for certain they had to have a hard out for their season because of it, that's not entirely true. So what happens now? So now they've got to figure out what level of outbreak and attrition is going to be tolerable and how they're even going to report positive tests.
You know, I don't have firm number of days in mind. I think the way that I think about it, Dan, is in the vein of competitive integrity, right? In a 60-game season, if we have a team or two that's, you know, really decimated for with the number of people who have the virus and can't play for, you know, any significant period of time, it can have a real impact on the competition. And we have to think very, very hard about what we're doing.
If somebody tests positive, Brian Cashman, the Yankee GM, said the teams can't announce if they tested positive. So how do they go on the injury report? What's the designation there, Commissioner?
They're just going to be reported as being on the injured list like any other injured player. You know, look, I want to be really clear about this. This is not a lack of transparency issue. It is what's allowed by federal law.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to be out there talking about somebody else's medical condition without their permission. I think that the reality in an everyday game is that people are going to kind of figure out what's going on when somebody's not present.
No, I understand what you're saying. I just didn't know what baseball,
we're just going to report them like as if they're an injured player, like any other injured and unable to play player.
I'm not sure how to describe your personality here today. I mean, you're exasperated, defeated, drained.
I don't feel any of those things, Dan, really. I really don't. I'm hopeful is what I am. I'm hopeful and I'm realistic. I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to give the game back to our fans, and I'm realistic about the challenges that we face going forward.
Listening to Commissioner Rob Manfred talk about the realities of baseball's current situation, and so we're going to be guessing. But it sounds like if all of a sudden three or four players are not available, we've got a pretty good idea that three or four players didn't all of a sudden develop elbow problems or didn't develop pulled hamstrings. That it's going to be somewhat obvious as to the reasons for some of the attrition as this goes on. And I guess what I'm wondering, too, is if one team is so profoundly affected. If you get an outbreak in a clubhouse and then you've got coaches, players, you know, say 15 guys all quarantined and or symptomatic, whatever you got to do, does that shut down the whole league if you have to take a team out of play? Or do you just keep calling up guys from their secondary facility from the 60-player pool and just keep putting them in uniform and trotting them out there until you run out of guys? Because that, to me, is a level of tolerance that's a gray area and a sliding scale. When you say, now we've compromised competition, you can keep filling the uniforms. You can keep doing that as long as you want, especially if there's going to be this open pool of free agent minor league replacement players working out in Nashville that you can just sign them and slap your uniform on them and put the hat on them and trot them out there and say that that's a representation of your team. But at what point do you say this is no longer a Major League Baseball team and no longer worthy of MLB competition? And then what do you do with the rest of the schedule? Do you just extract that team from the schedule and rearrange everything? Or does that shut down the entire league? And I don't know the answer to some of this stuff, but some of this sounds somewhat inevitable. He was also asked, Manfred was on the Dan Patrick Show, he was asked how their new policies are going to be enforced and what the effect may be on this season. Are we going to get back to a 162 at some point?
I think that as with any set of rules, the most important thing is self-policing. I think the players understand that these protocols are necessary to keep them safe and keep the game going. We are going to be constantly and closely monitoring adherence to the protocols. But I will say, I talked to a number of clubs yesterday as players are reporting, and, you know, I was really heartened by the fact that kind of uniformly, what clubs are saying is players have been great about this. They have masks on. You don't have to tell them to wear them when they're off the field. They're doing the right thing. And that's good. That's good, because there is no, you don't have enough policemen to, you know, make sure everybody's doing the right thing. You have to rely on the fact that we educate the players, explain to them why we're doing what we're doing, and they self-police.
Would you be in favor of shortening the season as we move forward?
No. I not materially. I mean, I've always been open to the idea that, you know, within the historical bounds, which I see as 154 to 162, yeah, you know, depending on what we were doing with playoff formats and whatever, that I would be open to that kind of adjustment, but not a material adjustment. Look, a big part of our game and one of the biggest hurdles that we had to get over from a competitive perspective in terms of putting a 60-game season out there, there's a huge competitive difference between a 60-game sprint and a 162-game marathon. It's kind of like saying, you know, would you be in favor of making the New York Marathon 13 miles? I think the answer is no, right?
No, then I could run it.
Well, yeah, you could. I couldn't.
What about how does seating work in the dugout?
There are going to be actual markings in the dugout that will lay out the social distancing and during the period of time, which may be, you know, the whole season where we're not having fans in the stands, we're actually going to expand outside the physical dugout itself, use some of the front rows of the stands.
Rob Manfred on the Dan Patrick Show talking about MLB's return plans, and it is happening. Sports are going to try to do this in the face of everything that's continuing to happen around us. So here we go. We're all going to be witnesses to this experiment in one way or another. There's so much happening in this. I want to get your reaction, of course, 312-644-6767. But I think that there's some thread here so far in this show that we heard about the commonality between health and intelligent practices and competition and likelihood of winning. Ian Happ said it. Ian Happ said health is a competitive advantage. And there's no question that it is, because the players that you want out there are the players you want out there. The starters are starters for a reason. Minor leaguers are minor leaguers at this point for various reasons. And that is a way to incentivize practices both at your facility and, more importantly, away from the facility. Want to get to that. I also want to get to something that Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic wrote last night. He kind of went to a pretty dark place, and he thought about something that I'm surprised he hadn't yet considered, because there's a column here about a possibility of what would we think if this happens, and we'd kind of been thinking about that already, at least some of us have. Also, John Heyman, who had been an ownership side and a commissioner side reporter throughout the labor standoff negotiation, whatever you want to call it, to try to be reasonable about what it actually was. But when even he was dismayed with some of those comments, I think that says something. We'll get to all of it next on The Score.
I have to say I made one mistake.
Well, maybe it just did in what you admitted regarding a non-negotiation that was far short of best efforts to play the maximum number of games and saying the quiet part out loud. And I don't know if he thinks he can win a grievance by saying that something was assumed to be in that March deal that was not, and that the lawyers admitted was not, but it sounds like where he's going here, because that sounds to me like it's fairly open and shut. It sounded that way to Ian Happ, too, who was on the advisory committee as the negotiations went on, as now the Cubs player rep. So that is part of what baseball has to deal with now, and that's for down the road, because right now you've got all of the pressing issues of the logistics of getting guys exactly where they're supposed to be and when they're supposed to be there and making sure that they are adhering to everything that's going on. Now, we know that over time, we had always heard John Heyman, the Radio.com MLB insider on Molly and Haw many days, and he had always been much more aligned with ownership and seemingly getting his information directly from Rob Manfred and owners and being on that side far more than the player's side. But even he is unsure why Manfred said what he said.
Why he said that, maybe he meant never more than 60 prorated. He certainly didn't say that. You are correct in the way you heard it. They did make multiple offers for more than 60 games. I mean, I know when you're negotiating, a lot of times you assume that the other side's not going to take that offer and going to keep negotiating. But, I mean, they started these negotiations quite a while ago, and there certainly was time for more than 60 games as their offers reflected. So I'm not sure why he said that, but you're right. It could be part of a grievance. I mean, that'll be up to the arbitrator, Mark Irvings, who will decide what goes on here with this grievance. You know, I think the owners are very confident, and they certainly said that publicly, that they don't think there's anything to the grievance. The players obviously feel that there is, because the owner's last offer included $33 million in salary forgiveness, $25 million player playoff pool, and many other goodies that they gave up to have this grievance. You know, it's not great for baseball, and the vote was 33-5. So there were only four, I believe, four teams and one player that voted to take the offer. Other 33 entities, mostly teams, 29 of them being, about 26 of them being teams, voted not to take the offer and to go ahead with the grievance. The Cubs, in my understanding, are one of the handful of teams, and I believe it was four teams, that voted to take the offer and go ahead and play, by the way.
There's a little nugget of news at the back end of that. But when you've lost John Heyman, when he can't figure out why Rob Manfred said what he said, then you're probably in a different place. Another guy who had been connected closely with the ownership side has been Ken Rosenthal. And it was weird because yesterday he posted a column on The Athletic that I found strange, frankly, because he's just now considering something that a lot of us had been considering for a while. So check this out. He writes, Dr. Zachary Binney, an epidemiologist at Oxford College of Emory University, posed the questions that have troubled me ever since baseball started talking about resumption. In a conversation with The Athletic's Jason Stark, Binney spoke of a hypothetical older or higher risk coach or manager and asked, what if, God forbid, he gets the virus and ends up in the hospital or on a ventilator or dies? What would that mean psychologically for the league or for the team? He said Binney could have been talking about any older manager, coach, or umpire in a high risk category. Heck, he could have been talking about young players who are not high risk. What if someone dies? How will we feel about all this then? And then there's paragraph after paragraph after paragraph that ends with this. Intellectually, even emotionally, I understand the importance of trying to play. But every time I think of the worst case scenario, I almost shake with fear. If someone dies, I'm not sure we'll ever make peace with what happened. I know I will never look at the sport the same way again. Well, not to be too blunt about it, but duh. Isn't that everything that we're talking about when we have the Twins deciding that some of their older coaches are going to be exempt to saying, no, don't show up. We're going to pay you. Stay home. Stay away. When somebody like Marv Albert decides that he doesn't want to go to the NBA bubble because he's 79. Isn't that what's underpinning all of this? Like, we're just now realizing, wait a second here. This novel virus has already killed 130,000 people, and it could kill more people. People are at risk. And even short of that, when it can do any other long-term health damage and multiple hospitalizations. I mean, really? That we're just kind of now waking up and recognizing that could happen? Or how about this? What if it's not a player or coach or umpire? What if somehow, because of exposures and because of travel, anybody involved passes it to someone somewhere who dies? Is that life no less valuable? Is somebody's grandma or grandpa or brother or sister or mother or father or high risk person affected by this desire to come back and play and put people on airplanes and have people stay in hotels? And is that life no less valuable? Let alone a quote-unquote baseball life. What would we do then? What would we think about the sport if someone who's actually in baseball were to die? Like, what? Seriously, dude? Like, now you're just kind of coming around to considering the ramifications of all of this and what's at stake? I really just, I found that to be kind of strange. I do like hearing that that Ian Happ put it the way he did, and that Rob Manfred did, saying the competitive advantage to trying to be as healthy as possible and smart as possible. And I hope, it is really my hope, that the players are sharing those thoughts among themselves, just as Lucas Giolito discussed, regarding away from the field and away from work, because that's what's happening now. What's driving the uptick in Sunbelt states and in areas of California, what's driving the uptick is socializing. That's what people are understanding now, and that's why there's some worry this weekend about people getting together unmasked and not distant, that's how it's happening. It's happening in bars and restaurants. So if you stay out of there, and if you're, you know, you're still dining outside, or there's a way you can go out and have a drink, or you can drink at home, you can sit on your patio, you can do all that. There's a way to do it. But this is what we're learning now. This is what states are learning. And even some states, it's not just about those that reopened or didn't reopen, because regardless of the state policy, and obviously that has some effect and some example that's set, but I've been reading how Nate Silver has been following some of the data. A lot of it is just individuals, regardless of what state policy is, no matter where they are, saying, okay, now we're going to go out and socialize, and now we're going to all go sit in a bar, and that's where it's being spread. We know baseball players like to go out. Baseball players like to go have a big steak and a glass of wine. We know that. But it's a matter of how, as teammates, they can be incentivized. How, if they want to win, if they want to compete, they are much more likely to win the World Series this year if they are smart. So that's good. I think it should be framed that way and sold that way internally among players, and not just from the GM or from the manager telling a team that, but it should be all teams. It should be any of these sports that are coming back saying, this is, you owe it to your teammates as far as a winning thing. It sounds cheap and sort of kind of tawdry just to say, well, sure, we're talking about life and death and a pandemic, but make it about winning. I know that's kind of gross. But if it makes for better public health in these cases, if that's what reaches guys, if that's what resonates with them, if that's what keeps them out of restaurants and bars and keeps them home and smart, then you take what you can get when you can get it. It's sort of like, I think the Surgeon General said something like, wear a mask so college football can come back. And I'm thinking, now you know you're really trying to talk to the dumbest subset out there. If the incentive is, well, wait a second here, I wouldn't, but if it's going to bring back college football, I'll do whatever you say, Doc. Bill on Capitol Hill is on the Score. Hello, Bill.
Hello, darling. I hope you and yours are safe and well.
Well, good enough so far. Hope you are as well and yours.
Yeah, good. Happy Independence Day for whatever it's worth. Poor Rob Manfred, right? Like, he's got to have a conversation with his guidance counselor, right? Because, you know, how is he to know that he was just hoping to cash his checks and sort of, you know, bust a union every now and again. And, you know, instead he finds himself in the middle of a worldwide pandemic and possibly a worldwide revolution. And God help me, but like listening to John Morosi John Heyman and some of these guys, you know, I think about that scene in that throwaway bit in The Simpsons where Homer's looking for a new place to hang, and he's like, wait a second, something's wrong here. This lesbian bar doesn't have a fire escape. Just like, you know, hi, guys. But, like, and in some ways, you know, we're sort of in a moral triage moment, right? We have the drowned and the saved, and you know, and you're right that, you know, we're sort of collectively dragged down by our dumbest members. And so, you know, poor Rob Manfred's got to look at across the table that includes the Wilpons and the Lerners and the Ricketts. I mean, what the hell else are you going to do? But one of the things that stood out to me, though, in his little talk about the disabled list, for whatever it's worth, it's because my Adderall hasn't kicked in, but I'm curious about how COVID, this crisis, is going to play on HIPAA reforms, right? Because there's always been sort of nagging pressure that the privacy laws intended to protect us from exploitation, as they were, have nonetheless become sort of a weapon for corporations. And we can get into this as a separate conversation, but, like, every state in the union now is either directly in the gambling business or certainly in the gambling regulatory business.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got all sorts of, I mean, you know, the injury lists only exist to appease the gamblers in the first place. But now you've got all sorts of room for arbitrage there, right? Because if you know, if you can get first that you know, this guy's on there and, you know, either for a broken thumb or for possibly debilitating lung disease, I mean, you're on a goldmine of information, not just as it relates to, you know, that day or the next couple of weeks, but I mean, that's a lot, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
everything
you know
about the disease is,
Bill,
you can cripple somebody for life.
I hadn't thought about the gambling angle. I hadn't thought about the governmentally sanctioned gambling angle. And like you say, you could go from state to state because there's going to be wide spreads that now that you're going to have opportunity because of uncertainty in these various markets. And somebody really smart and really informed is going to have valuable information that could become very lucrative.
Well, and it's more like, and it, I mean, it's not even if an idiot like me can figure this out, then, like, you know, people like Nate Silver have got to be. I mean, all you would have, I mean, theoretically, you could just start watching what was happening at the gambling lines at regional gambling spots, right? So, if suddenly there's a lot of action in and around the Dallas-Fort Worth area around the next Texas Rangers game. Right. Say, you know, that might be telling you something really important about what's going on with that team. And, you know, that there's some problems with the information flow back and forth. So, I think, and I don't know what all the implications of this are, but it felt important, as I say, because my Adderall hasn't kicked in.
No,
I wish you well and happy independence. Yeah.
And to you, Bill, thank you. Happy and healthy. I hadn't considered that. And not just the short term, not just player X unavailable for this game and the next 10 games, but player X may have lifelong lung capacity deficiency because of this. And all that stuff that we don't know. And what does that change for the futures market on this team or bets for next year? And it's why so many states have decided, I think it's what's going to be smart, as I understand it, and I'm not being a gambler, I rely on guys like Joe Ostrowski here on The Score, Danny Parkins, et cetera, that the states and the legal sports gambling that's been set up is in large part reliant on networking with the Las Vegas casinos and using their lines and not hiring their own people to set lines and create some of these arbitrageable discrepancies where you can start seeing money move that tells you that there is an imbalance somewhere. Their whole goal has to be to keep some balance along those lines. But that is especially with states now with holes in their budget that are getting into the gambling business and jumping in with both feet to both the gambling business and the legalized marijuana business, that's one where if you're not going to tell us, if it's just going to be like anybody else on an injured list and people are going to have to guess, well, wait a second, three guys don't all have sprained ankles at the same time. Three guys aren't all in the concussion protocol at the same time, that maybe something's going on here, that we are in absolutely uncharted territory when it comes to how this is going to not just affect the teams, but affect the way that we're consuming it and certainly gambling on it. Fascinating thought. Let's find out the latest from the NBA's plan as the NBA is grappling with its reality of deciding to try to do a non-bubble bubble in one of the hot spots for coronavirus on the entire planet. Keith Smith of Yahoo has the latest information on that, and he's coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.